Welcome back to the Cave of Solitude, here in the Six, the mega city of Toronto, where the NBA All-Stars come together to show their skills, and others come who've claimed bankruptcy so they don't have to pay for child support, where the Jordan stores open 24 hours, and it makes my life hell going to work. It makes it impossible for me to not swear at the strangers, and where the weather is minus 30. Makes your nose hairs stick together. This is Lady J coming to you. The hostess with the mostest. With the man that made it all happen. The legend.
The legend. Eric Anthony. No one's ever called me the legend. I like that. So, Daff J, with that wonderful descriptive introduction. It is NBA All-Star Weekend. You got that correct. But what's this show about? Is this a sports show? Is this a sports analytical breaking down the All-Star Game episode? What is this all about?
Absolutely not. I'm just bigging up
the... Why don't you tell the people what the Cave of Solitude is?
Cave of Solitude is a place where you sit in your solitude...
It's a very, very lonely place that we come to.
But you have a slew. You come to just a slew of information. You come across stuff that you like.
What kind of stuff that you like?
Fantasy stuff.
Fantasy stuff.
Sci-fi stuff. Things that don't exist. It's a mind trickery place.
You're on a roll. You're the Cave of Solitude for first time listener is your one stop spot for. Your one stop. Yeah, that's right. This is your comic book and pop culture podcast for anything that's going on that we're keeping track of. Conversation show. How's it going, Daff J?
It's going.
You got me hot. I didn't know where you were going with that intro, but I like it. How you doing?
Good. It's cold. It's cold today. It's record-breaking cold.
It is ridiculously cold. The type of cold that makes you say, I'm staying inside all day long and not moving. I'm staying under a blanket. I'm going to have a pile of books, comic books beside my bed, which I do right now. And I'm going to try to read as many as I can.
It's the type of weather that encourages antisocialism. But...
Antisocialism?
but we're trying to fight that with... coming together and discussing.
It sounds like some type of a political agenda, anti-socialism.
Dad, I don't want to see nobody. I don't want to go nowhere. I don't even want to talk to anyone on the phone. It's too cold to do anything. And our dog was like, what's this? What's happening?
And so far this weekend, you have plans every night.
I know. It's
ridiculous.
I wish I would have said no. I wish I could go back. But it's going to be good.
So, what's new and exciting in your world? You haven't been on the episodes or in the Cave of Solitude since we talked about Star Wars, Force Awakens, which is quite some time now. Mm-hmm. So, what's new in your realm? What's going on with you?
New. What's new? This isn't something that's new. I've kind of revisited or picked up my reading of Malcolm X. So if anyone has been looking or listening to our episodes, you would know perhaps early on when we started this, that's when I was reading Malcolm X. You think I would have been done by now.
Yeah, we think you've been off the show for so long because you've been trying to read this book, but in fairness, you've reread it.
In a way, kind of. There was a period in the book where it was just very, it was very repetitive, very, I don't know. It was just too much all at once, and I just needed a break from it. Not that it's a commentary on the material of the book. It's an excellent read, but for me personally, it was too much. So I just needed to give it a break. But then I picked it up again and rewatched the movie with Denzel Washington, so it got me back into it. So I'm almost done. Like, I am done, but I just want to read now what the author of the autobiography had to say about his encounter with Malcolm X, because that's where obviously all the information came from. So now what I'm reading is his perspective of the person that he was getting to know.
So out of the two of us in this in this team, I'm the one who's been reading a plethora of useless information, comic books, Superman and Captain America, and you name it. And you're the, on the other hand, taking a step away from the nonsense and actually delving into some American history, civil rights movements. Because you haven't just, like, I've sat in with you. You've been watching the Nina Simone documentary, Muhammad Ali, the trials of Muhammad Ali. Like, you've gotten into a zone of trying to see what's going on back in, yeah, in those times, right? Yeah,
but, you know, I wouldn't say, you know, and I know you're joking, but, like, I think the materials that we read, even though it's an escape, the comic books and these fictional characters, I think there's an undertone to a lot of the things that have happened in history that continue to plague humanity today. And I think there's a message within a lot of the reading material that we come across in comic books that speak on the things that
it's true
I've come across.
I actually, now that you mention it, there is a Batman book, a novel actually, that I read in the past.
No Man's Land?
Not No Man's Land, no. You gave that one a shot on the beach, and there's too many words on the page. No, but this one would
actually... There was no pictures.
This one would actually pique your interest. It was called either White Heat or Fear Itself. And what it was a Batman story that he was fighting against a white supremacist group. And it had to do with racism and a little bit of civil rights history. So the villains in it would be like...
The KKK?
I think it is the KKK, as a matter of fact. But it's pretty cool because of what you're talking about and what you've been reading. It would kind of be an escape of something. Okay, this didn't actually happen, but it's dealing with kind of the same issues. What you were just saying right now brought that back for me.
Mm-hmm.
Like you said, granted, anything that I've read has not happened in human history. It's all been made up kind of sci-fi stuff. But you, on the other hand, it's cool to see... You broaden your horizons and actually take an interest in things that affected real lives and affected culture as far as politics and people's rights. But also, on the other end, like for Muhammad Ali and Nina Simone and all these other people, artistically and athletically.
Yeah.
Like, they did a lot of things culturally that aren't necessarily political in nature. I mean, they are, but... They also added a certain creativity and a certain legend, like Muhammad Ali, what he did for his sport, but also standing up for what he believed in. There's a lot to mm-hmm. that isn't just, you know, in the sense of Malcolm X or Martin Luther King trying to fight for people's rights to, you know, the right to vote and the right to have certain
the
jobs.
Right to be human beings.
The right, no, like absolutely.
That, yeah, that's a whole other episode. I can go into that.
Yeah, no, it's true. Hey, you know what? Maybe you could have a civil rights episode. Why not? And on that note, I was in a couple bookshops lately, and they have actually Malcolm X graphic novels. And a lot of the, like, I think it was even The Underground Railroad was made into a graphic novel and certain things for Martin Luther King. So I don't know if that would interest you. We could do that for an episode on the show.
That'd be interesting.
And I don't know if this would be, it's not in the same wheelhouse, kind of is, but there is a very, very well-regarded graphic novel called Mouse. I don't know if I told you about it.
Yeah, I remember.
That has to do with the World War II and concentration camps. It's anthropomorphic, which means the characters are drawn in the form of animals, but mm-hmm. they're dealing with the actual Jews in concentration camps fighting the Nazis, or not fighting, but, you know, being under the control and prisoners of the Nazis. So I don't know if that would interest you to read something like that. Mm-hmm. It won a Nobel Peace Prize.
No way.
Or Pulitzer Prize, one of the two. I can't remember. Yeah. But something very, very highly regarded. I haven't read it yet. Because...
But I think I've seen it in the house.
Yeah, it's in our bookshelf, yeah. I haven't read it yet because it's one of those books that you know is going to be so deep and upsetting and moving all at the same time. Yeah. But you got to be kind of in that headspace to be willing... Like, when I read Boy in Striped Pajamas, at the end of it, it was such a... It was, like, such a jaw-dropper, mm-hmm. but also a bit of a downer.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know if, you know, when you're going to read something, you got to be kind of prepared.
Prepared for it, yeah.
So I've been putting it off, but I do have it. So if you want to read that after you're done your Malcolm X, we could do that as an episode.
Yeah, that sounds good. I like that.
But this week, we are going to talk about the important things in life.
The hooplas.
The hooplas?
Yeah.
The most important character in your life, fictional.
Mr. Batman.
Mr. Batman, Bruce Wayne. A new direct-to-video animated movie came out. Want to tell us about it? You want to give us the rundown of the synopsis of Batman Bad Blood?
Oh, you just ruined it. Okay.
Why did I ruin it?
Nothing.
No, go ahead. Tell me what you're going to do.
No, nothing.
Tell me.
I was going to sing Taylor Swift's Bad Blood. But now you ruined it. So
I can insert it while we get into.
So it's blood. About stuff that happens to Batman.
As most Batman stories is.
Yeah.
Okay, why don't we look it up on our wiki, on our iPads that we have with us, and we will give them the proper synopsis of the movie so that it's not just stuff that happens to Batman. Okay, the information on this Wikipedia is like giving you the entire movie plot. So yes, there will be spoilers, but we don't need to read you the entire plot. So why don't we, you want to grab the box over there, Daff, the movie box, and we'll read what's actually on the back of it. Yeah, give it some of your acting chops when you read it. Your narrator skills, as though this was a movie preview.
Okay, here we go.
Okay.
The gossip, I just... Okay.
Try it again.
Okay. The Gotham City night sky erupts in flames at Batman as Batman flies. I told you I couldn't do this. Okay. Take two.
Okay. take three.
It's three now?
Yeah.
The Gotham City night sky erupts in flames as Batman battles Firefly, Tusk, and Killer Moth. But when the smoke clears, Batman is missing, and the mysterious Batwoman is the only witness to the events. Now, with the bat signal going unanswered and a city on edge, Nightwing and Robin form an uneasy alliance with Batwoman and newcomer Batwing. Together, they'll fight to uncover a sinister plot that involves mind control and a monstrous new villain known as Hederic. It's an
heretic.
Mm-hmm. I'm not done. Wait a minute. It's an all-new epic chapter from the DC universe that proves that when it comes to Batman, justice truly does run in the family.
Thank you.
Okay, and now in Francais.
No.
It has it in French.
Okay. We
for
don't,
our French listeners.
Are you going to do the whole show in the French subtitles? French listeners. Thank you very much, Dap J. So this is directed by Jay Oliva, who did a number of the DC Universe movies now. He started, I think, with War, Throne of Atlantis, and Son of Batman, and Batman vs. Robin. I'm certain he directed those five. I'm not sure, other than those ones, which ones he was involved with. Screenplay written by J.M. DeMatteis, who is a very renowned comic book writer from the 80s until today. I don't know if you can think of anything you've read from him. I don't know if I suggested any of stories that he's done, but he is very well regarded for things he's done for Spider-Man, for Batman, as well as Justice League books. So he's in the game now writing some of the movies for the DC Universe. He's been known to kill off a lot of characters. Whenever he gets his chance to write some stuff, he's killed off Aunt May. He's killed off some Spider-Man villains, Dr. Octopus. But in this one, no one dies, or so we think, in Batman Bad Blood. What did you think of this animated feature? This is the third part of the Batman and Robin movies thus far. Do you like those movies?
I don't remember. I didn't really like this one.
You didn't really like it?
No.
Okay, how come?
Let me first point out things that I did like about them.
All right.
It's a Batman movie, so I like it.
Okay.
I like the fighting scenes. And I think they even did.
I was really impressed.
In the special features, the J. Oliva.
Oliva.
He basically did some research on fighting techniques, but real fighting techniques, And, you know, I think he even met with people that would do, like, the video game stuff, so that it was really real. So it looked like we were watching something from The Matrix or something. Like, it was some really good scenes in the movie. What I didn't like... It's like a Harvey and Mike situation in Suits. Like, too many people know that Mike is not a real lawyer.
It's a deep cut reference here.
Right now, I felt in this particular movie, there was way too many people that know Batman's true identity and his secret. And it's just too... I don't like that.
Who can you list some of the people who know that who he is?
Lucius Fox knows. And I'm okay with that because he helps him with his equipment, whatever. But then his son basically confirms. I think he's always hunched, like had a hunch, but it's never really been confirmed. Now this Batwoman comes to know that Bruce Wayne is Batman. So that's two extra people besides who already really is in the family, which would be Damian and Dick and Alfred, right? Obviously, Talia knows that Bruce Wayne is whatever. And if Talia knows, then her whole crew knew that was Bruce Wayne and that he was Batman. So it just felt like it was just too... There wasn't any unknowns anymore. It wasn't a mystery anymore. There was too much... There's too much out there for people.
So that's your biggest qualm with this film? That people know who he is?
Yeah.
But a lot of people know who Batman is.
People in his world, mm-hmm. but not...
But sometimes, you know, it's... Having said that, he still keeps it secret from a lot of people. He really feels... You're right. Only those who earn it.
Yeah, but even Batman wasn't happy with the fact that Dick Grayson revealed his own identity to Batwoman also, right? Like, it wasn't a smart thing to have done, and he did it.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So I just, I didn't like that too much.
That throws it out the window for you. Okay, other than the fighting scenes, which were really good, because they even brought in some stunt choreographers and fight choreographers from the Batman v Superman movie, as well as the Man of Steel, to help out with making it as fluid and as realistic as possible, which I was really, for an animated movie, it was pretty awesome to see how well they did in this regard. Because I remember watching the Batman animated series, and it was, you know, a couple punches and maybe a throw. Very, very simple action sequences. But this one was extremely detailed. So other than that you liked, what about the story itself? Let's get into the family aspect of Batman having gone missing in action. How do you feel about the other characters within the family? Because I think that's what this movie really focuses on, and I enjoyed it a lot because of that. I love the character of Dick Grayson / Nightwing. I even like Damian Wayne as Robin. I think they're awesome team together. You've read The Black Mirror, which featured Dick Grayson as Batman. How do you find this character? Like, what do you think of him?
Dick Grayson.
Seeing him now kind of have to fulfill this role because Alfred has basically said to him, we gotta keep the Batman legend alive. You gotta go out there. Someone's gotta go out there to represent for him.
I think it's I like the fact that he takes on the mantle, mm-hmm. but I think I like it because how much he dislikes it.
Yeah.
There's a story and drama behind that. Like, who wouldn't want to be Batman? You know what I mean? Like, everybody's favorite superhero, if they're smart, is Batman. Right? And why would he be? Oh, he's cool. He's smart. He's a detective. He's, like, relentless. He's
a billionaire.
He's, you know, disciplined and fights for justice. And he's not partial to anyone or anything. It's about truth and justice. And that's a great trait to have. And although I think... And Dick Grayson was trained by those morals, but he's plagued by the shadow of the Batman, and he doesn't want to have anything. Like, as much as he loves Bruce and will fight to save him sometimes from himself, he doesn't want to have to be that person. And so I think it's interesting that they play that into the story.
Mm-hmm. I think Dick Grayson is a more relatable character than Batman is, to be honest. Out of all of the DC characters, people forget that Dick Grayson has been around for 75 years, almost as long as, you know, 1 year short of Superman and Batman's existence. And I feel like he's the one character, even before Spider-Man, before any of the Marvel characters, that we can all relate to, because he's really dealing with all of the things that we go through. He's a kid who, like Bruce, lost his parents to a horrible crime and a horrible tragedy. But more than anything, he is trying to get out of the shadow of his surrogate father, if you will, or his adoptive father in Bruce, right? He's constantly being made to feel as though he can't get outside of who his dad is. Even when he's Robin, right? He goes off to lead the Titans and try to become a leader in his own right. And in some ways, he's a better leader than Batman because he isn't as excluding from
because
people.
Because he smiles while he kicks butt? Like,
well, he's more, he communicates with his teammates more. He takes more of a, he doesn't privatize himself quite as much as Bruce does. But even more so, like, his dad, in a way, is Batman. So everyone's going to be like, you'll never live up to what this guy is. How powerful he is. How smart he is. How precise he is in everything he does. You'll just never live up to your father. And as kids, we're always trying to really become our own person. Identify ourselves as individual. Not necessarily always be known as the son or the daughter of this person. And let their legacy be the one that defines who we are, who we'll never be. So mm-hmm. I feel like in the character of Dick Grayson is somebody that we can immediately relate to because we've all had to go through that. Whereas Batman we relate to because I think we like seeing that person who is in such pain rise up and overcome. And Dick Grayson does that as well. But what is cool about Dick Grayson is that he gets to a point in his life where, like, Bruce is still a little boy at the end of it all. 40 years old, 50 years old, he's still just a little boy, sad that his parents are gone, whereas Dick has moved on with his life and can be happy again. And he is as devoted to his job as Batman is, to protect people, because he has the means to do it. But he also doesn't let it, he doesn't put himself in a cave and become a recluse from people. Do you know what I mean? Does that make sense? So it's interesting to see him now take over the mantle of Batman, where he's, I think I read it in a recent Nightwing book, where he approaches some people, some informants on the street, and they're like, you're not the Bat. And he goes, I can do a really good impression. And he does his best Batman mannerisms, where he freaks the people out, and they actually believe that he is or could be that effective as mm-hmm. Batman. Mm-hmm. But he ends that scene in the book saying, you should see me do my Flash. Hmm. Right? Mm-hmm. And they're like, what do you mean? He goes, you want to see it again? Right? So he has that little bit of humor. He has that smile. He has a little bit of lightheartedness to him. But he's not as controlled by the tragedy in his life. Doesn't let it define him forever. So I like seeing him.
I don't know if it's
Batman.
What defines Bruce Wayne. I think it's the thing that he doesn't want to let go of, because then his whole purpose will just be thrown out the window. Like, if one day he's accepting of the fact that he's okay with what happened, then the Batman dies.
But that's not true, because Dick Grayson is proof of that.
The Batman, not Nightwing. There's a difference.
But when Dick Grayson was Batman, he was still effective. He still did the job.
I'm not saying he wasn't effective. I'm just saying, but that's the thing. Like, for you to complete a task, is going to be different how I complete a task mm-hmm. because of what drives me. Mm-hmm. So, you know, maybe Bruce Wayne doesn't allow himself to feel, or he closes off, or he remains cold and is this, not a recluse, but like, you know, he doesn't communicate with his team the way Dick Grayson does.
Or he should, the way he should communicate with his team, being the father figure of them, right?
I'm not saying the way he does it is right. Mm-hmm. I'm just saying I think everybody addresses their situations in a unique way because everybody comes from a different place. And although you and I might have the same type of experience, mm-hmm. it's never exactly the same.
Yeah, so Bruce needs to hold on to that feeling to be his driving force.
Yeah.
Because it's the motivator.
Yeah.
I got you. So how do you find in the movie, in the film, Dick Grayson as the Batman? What do you like about how he handles business? What do you dislike?
What do I like?
Mm-hmm.
I like that he respects the fact that that's how... that he's... even though he's taken it upon... even though he has the responsibility of being the Bat, he doesn't alter it. He doesn't take it upon himself to be like, well, I can do it better.
Mm-hmm. He pays tribute and honor to it.
Exactly. He may not like it, but for the sake of respect of for Batman and for... and he must know that it's working. Like, Bruce Wayne might be a jackass, or Batman might be a jackass, but his technique works. It's been working all these years. So, the no smiling, the no qualms, the no, you know, BSing, it gets the job done. And Dick Grayson must realize that.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, and the villains respond to that.
Mm-hmm.
So he's not gonna, all of a sudden, you know, kick someone in the face and smile about it. Because it's like, that's what he does, but that's not what Batman would do. So, I like the fact that although he doesn't like the idea of it, he still stays true to what Bruce Wayne has made of the Batman.
I think Batman had said once someone had written in one of the books, he was comparing all of the Robins, how Dick Grayson had the potential to be the best of them because he was just naturally gifted,
mm-hmm.
where he never really, he didn't have to go through the training process that the other Robins had to go to learn how to be athletic.
Mm-hmm.
It was just part of his life, part of his DNA.
Mm-hmm.
So in some ways, I always feel like out of all of the Bat family, even including Bruce, he's got a certain edge athletically to all the other characters within Bruce Wayne's extended family. What do you think of the fact, and I've said this before episodes ago, I don't remember when, so excuse me if you do remember it, but the fact that out of every comic book character that there is, the biggest loner or recluse, if you will, the one who does his business in a cave with just his butler, really does have the most extended family and people attached to him.
Mm-hmm.
Like, what do you think of that aspect of him? Is it strange when you put it in that perspective? It's contradictory. And who is your favorite member within his family, all of them included?
My favorite member has always been and will always be Alfred Pennyworth.
Mm-hmm.
What was your question? What do I think about the idea that he's alone but is surrounded by so many people?
Yeah. He has so much attachments to people. Dependence, really.
It's funny because I don't think he realizes that.
Yeah.
I think he still feels alone and still feels like, but I would too if I'm always misunderstood, if I'm always looked at as a grump and you know what I mean? Like, everybody's always like, come on, you know, Bruce, like, you need to, like, lighten up a bit, or you need to, no one is seeing or understanding how I feel or can comprehend why I'm choosing to do something. I'm always the bad guy. So, of course, you're still going to feel like you're on your own.
Mm.
But, like I said, I mean, I think that's good storytelling. You can take, like I said, it's very easy for Dick Grayson to take out the mantle and be happy about it, but to give it some weight, to give it a twist, to give it some juice, he's not going to like it. And that's what the writers are there for. That's what they do. Yeah, Batman is surrounded by so many people. He's not going to realize it. Children. And so, therefore, there's going to be family turmoil. There's going to be drama. There's going to be people butting heads. But that's what an actual family is.
Mm-hmm.
But Bruce doesn't realize it.
Mm-hmm. I think that's what makes Batman...
Did I answer your question?
Yeah, yeah. I think that's what makes Batman, out of all comic book characters, to me... In my opinion, the most interesting is that he has a cast of characters. He has no one to talk to a lot of the time. It's just his monologues that you see in the bubbles. But he has family and people attached to him. Where in a story, you can have the Huntress show up or Dick Grayson or Tim Drake. Or like all these people where a lot of other characters don't have as many people to interact with in some capacity. Where you can read another story or watch another movie within the DC universe and be like, yeah, I'm watching Young Justice. Every time you see Robin, you're thinking of his relationship with Batman, how weighty it makes everything he does or says within the team framework. You're like, yeah, he knows that, or he went through this with Batman, and that's that reference.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's what makes the dynamic of Batman comic books so interesting, is that there's so many people involved,
mm-hmm.
that you can draw from a well of a wealth of characters.
Right.
In this one, we're introduced to Batwoman. She hasn't been in any features thus far, and not Batgirl, but Katie Kane,
mm-hmm.
Batwoman.
Her first appearance in the comic books was what, in the 60s?
I think 50s or 60s, something. This, she predates Batgirl,
yeah.
Barbara Gordon.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
And it was highly criticized back in the day how she was portrayed, because I guess it was very stereotypical. And
wasn't she the niece of someone? Or her niece was Batgirl,
yeah,
or something like,
yeah,
that. Yeah,
yeah. And I think a lot of her... There was, you know, a certain level of sexism, the way the character was written and all that kind of stuff.
But didn't they put them in a relationship,
I think,
back then?
Yeah, I think so. I'm not very, very up on my 1950s Batman history, but I know the way it was originally drawn, and I know that it was Catherine Kane back then. She did have, like, the Batgirl had a relationship with Robin, and she was supposed to be the counterpart to Batman, maybe his girlfriend, and when Bruce Wayne was out of costume, they were also dating kind of situation. But this Batwoman is very different.
Yeah.
From the one that was originally created and written about.
She was really white.
She was pasty white.
Yeah, they made her so
translucent.
Transparent, yeah, in the show. I thought it was just like maybe... Anyway, yeah, she was really white.
What are your thoughts on her inclusion in the Batman family, or just her character itself in today's world?
So my question to you before I answer that, is this Batman, is this the new 52, or the new, like, what is this? What origin is this?
This Batwoman?
Yeah.
She existed before the new 52 as well as in the new 52. She was already existing before. So pre-new 52,
she existed? But her origin has stayed the same then?
Yeah, as far as I know. I've never actually delved into any Batwoman.
So the story that they tell in the movie is that she was basically victimized as a child.
Yeah.
With other members of her family.
Yes.
Lost her twin sister, lost her mother. She's the sole survivor, and so her and her father...
I think that is correct.
Just went on with their lives. Her father was some kind of militant person. And I guess she just decided one night that she was no longer going to be victimized. And so, I think she served in the military,
mm-hmm.
But then took it upon herself to train herself. Didn't want to be associated with or be a part of the crew.
Yeah, she didn't want to.
However, she took the bat symbol and made it a part of
her shtick.
Her, yeah.
Yeah, and she's
You gotta have some real like big balls to be able to do that. I don't wanna know anything about you or have anything to do with you, but I'm gonna take what's yours and make it mine. Like, you're ballsy.
Because she was saved by him. So I guess out of a respect to the fact that she had
been... But she said that she was upset that she was saved by him. He pissed, literally what she said in this movie, that he pisses me off. And I hate that he saved me, kind of thing.
Or that she needed someone to save her. Yeah.
Yeah.
She's very different from the Batman family because, unlike all of Bruce and his proteges, she carries some weaponry on her. She's not afraid to shoot anybody.
Yeah.
She's kind of more, I would say, she would have been a good sidekick for Jason Todd,
mm-hmm.
who has a passion for guns. So does she.
Yeah.
So initially, Batman, at the beginning of the movie, he is tracking her on a case and helps her get out of a jam, sacrifices his life for her. But he's trying to either decide, am I taking her down or am I going to try to...
Take her and tame her.
And the usage of firearms is a big no-no for Mr. Bruce Wayne / Batman. But along with that, they've made this character to be a gay character in the comic books and as well as in the movie. Being a cartoon, did it kind of surprise you that they put it all out there? Because with these cartoons now, they're getting to the point where, for me, I look at superheroes and cartoons, or animated, I shouldn't say cartoons, but animated features as being something I should be able to show a kid. But this has very adult themes, as far as relationships are concerned, as even, in some cases, use of language. So did it surprise you that they approached it with this level of, like, yeah, this is who she is. She's on a date with a woman. They use this language within the... It's not filthy.
I think
filthy.
It surprised me because I'm not used to that type of entertainment. Or how do I say it? Had this been me watching it as a kid, back way when, of course I would have been taboo, I guess is the word. But I think today... It's, you know, the acceptance of homosexuality and all of that. It's actually being taught in schools. So for it to now just be a part of entertainment, whether it's movies, animation, TV shows, it's just widely accepted all around. And so it's not really a shocker to anyone.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a big deal.
Mm-hmm. But being an animated feature, like this... They could, at some point...
Even, like, the swearing and stuff. You think these 9-year-olds don't know what the... Like, how to...
Use these words?
Yeah. Like, of course they're saying it. Like, this is nothing new. Like, or the fact that she was... I like that she... Like, when she was Batwoman, she wasn't, like, sexified. Like, she had boobs.
But she wasn't
like popping. Showing skin or anything. Like right. it wasn't even like a Catwoman when wearing heels. She had boots with treads on them. Like she was there to get a job done.
Right.
So I don't think there was a couple of things that was portrayed realistically and not in your face. But I think there's a lot of aspects of it that, like I said, it's so the norm in today's society. It nobody really bats an eyelash to those things anymore. So
Do you think DC should tone down their level of? I want to choose the right word because I don't want anyone thinking who hasn't seen this movie that this is like a rated R feature. It's not, but it definitely isn't for kids anymore. Do you think they should tone it down a bit so that it's more accessible for a 10-year-old to watch? Or do you like the fact that it's...
Personal opinion in this particular animation, I think it was done... Obviously, I'm heterosexual.
right.
It's obvious. But, like, I mean, I'm married to you. But I don't... think like they didn't like how do I say this? They didn't touch on anything that we're not aware of. Like, it's gonna come up in conversation. It's widely visible to everyone that there's certain people that lead certain lifestyles mm-hmm. that are not like your own. Mm-hmm. And so, I think it was done, and this is probably a, not the right phrase, but I think it was done in a tasteful way. Like, yeah, she's on a date or a blind date with Montoya, which we know in the comic book world, she is a gay character, but it wasn't like in your face. Mm-hmm. You know, it was like they're having drinks together. They're talking to each other. She finds out she's a detective and she said, well, do you have a problem with that? Well, no, I just mm-hmm. saw that you have a gun mm-hmm. kind of thing. And then, oh, I have to go. Like, yeah. Yeah, that's what they all say. She's like, no. I really enjoyed our time together. Let's meet up. Here's my card. And she takes off. Mm-hmm. So it's still presenting a realistic scenario that happens in the world, but it wasn't in my face. As opposed to Deadpool, the new movie that's coming out, it's clearly, like I think Marvel has said, this is not for kids. Mm-hmm. It is not for kids. The content of it, the language is going to be used, how gruesome it is, which I think is done in poor taste and for advertising and publicity. And I think that's done stupidly because your biggest market right now is kids. Like they want to see, they may not get all the comic books, but they're going to go see these movies. Mm-hmm. Like the Avengers has done so mm-hmm. well because it caters to children.
Right.
But maybe they've reached such a high with their money that they're like, we don't care. We just want to do a movie that makes us feel good. It's not about the masses. It's about the material, and we're just gonna go all out with it.
Yeah.
Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah. And that's why I think I had that in the back of my head was, I don't want any of these movies where, like, I want to be able to take a young person, my brother or somebody, to be able to go and watch these and not have to be like, you're not ready for this. This is superhero stuff. Unless the character itself is written. Like, for instance, a movie like Kick-Ass, it's adapting exactly what it is from the comic books. Where something like Batman, I don't think that Batman movie should ever be rated R or ever should ever be done in a way that...
Yeah, I don't think his character would ever allow that to happen.
But like, see, something like this feature...
Like, he may encounter an enemy who would cross that line, but his thing is to never allow anyone to cross that line, nor himself. So, do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So, they could very well make a movie that is so out of character for this particular character. But then you know it's not really a true Batman story. But that's just my opinion.
Yeah. Like, I think, just on a tangent before we continue, I don't think they needed to make Deadpool, as filthy as it is. Like, they're very proud of how inappropriate it is. And Deadpool is a character who, you know, on the back of his comics in the past, it did say parental advisory or for, you know, a mature audience. But there is still a very, a lot of kids like this character. And I've read a couple of things that Deadpool has been in, and there's innuendos and things that he says that are inappropriate, but never to the point where you can adapt that in a way to make it still very good, but not as extreme.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm kind of disappointed because I was looking forward. I don't know if I was looking forward, but it's something definitely I would have gone to the theater to watch.
Piqued your interest.
But knowing that it's going to be, like, they're purposely going out of their way to make it filthy and not, I don't know. It to me, that type of entertainment, when there's constant cussing or I don't know, nudity or whatever, it's just it takes away from me the mm-hmm. entertainment factor. Like, now I'm just like, I don't want to watch this. Like, this isn't fun for me. I don't find it enjoyable mm-hmm. and it takes away from what I'm actually there for,
especially when I'm watching like superhero storytelling, comic book.
Because I don't think that is what defines this character. Like to me, it's beyond that. Like, yeah, we know that Bruce and Selina have a thing going on the side, but they don't concentrate on that. Like, that is one panel, if that.
Yeah, it shouldn't be the
thing. But it's and if anything, it's more to allude to the fact that, oh, because there's this physical attraction or there's this emotional connection, that's why it makes it so much harder to be the Batman, to be Catwoman. That's why they can't be together. Like, you want him to be with someone, but then the right person for him is actually the wrong person. Like, it adds to the story, but it doesn't take away from. Yeah. Like, it doesn't, like, it takes the, it doesn't take the spotlight away from what you're actually reading.
Right.
Or, you know, the content of it.
Yeah. And along with what you just said, in this movie, it definitely goes in the direction of Batman's previous love interest with Talia, Damian's mother, being the one behind his capture.
She's crazy.
She's captured Bruce and has basically tried to brainwash and manipulate him to the point of being her own soldier.
Yeah.
Because she just wants him in her life so badly. Even to the cost of saying, I'll get rid of this kid. Apparently, you don't know this when you're watching these movies, but there are numerous clones of Damian. And the Heretic, turns out, spoilers, he is a version or a clone of Damian that has been, his cloning has been sped up to the point where he's now full grown and an adult, but he doesn't have the memories of Damian as a child
yet. And quote unquote says he has no soul.
Right. He feels exactly. So they're trying to, what's the word? Extricate or take from Damian whatever he has within his brain and insert it into this,
but not by not by the will of his mother. Because when she found out that they did capture Damian to do this, she was unhappy about it. And then she was unhappy about the fact that this, I guess, clone was yearning for memory and affection and to be a person. Mm-hmm. And she saw that as a thing of weakness. So she eliminated him.
Mm-hmm.
Spoilers.
Yeah.
So it's like, it's so crazy. Like, she wants to have a true, deep relationship with this man that she calls her beloved. But yet she doesn't want anyone else to feel human emotion. It's the strangest thing. She's so crazy.
It's father's daughter.
Yeah.
Right. I love that dynamic, though, of seeing Damian in each movie having to really pick a side of who he's, where he's from, which influence is going to be the dominant one, whether it's going to be Bruce's or his grandfather and mother's.
I have to say one of my favorite moments in the movie was because not too long before I saw this movie, I was watching the Court of Owls movie.
Okay.
And in that movie, Batman, which I don't think he would have done. That was my gripe about that movie in the very beginning. He wouldn't just gone off and just accuse someone without having gathered all the facts and all the evidence. Like, but anyway, he mistakenly thought that Damian took it upon himself to kill someone. And so he's like, you know, you're exactly like your grandfather. You're the monster he wanted you to be. And I'm disappointed in you and all this. And Damien's like, what? Like, you actually think I killed him, kind of thing? And so because Bruce has tried so hard to teach him the value of life. And so anyway, and in Bad Blood, Damien is fighting this horny... That's not what I meant to say. But he did have horns.
The guy with tusks?
Yeah. Was it?
What was his name? Tusk?
I don't know. He was a bad guy. He looked like a mutant. He looked like Bebop and Rocksteady. Like, yeah. he looked a combination of both. But he's fighting him, and then he goes over the railings into this, like, because they're fighting in a factory or something. And he, like, batarangs it to try to save his life. And then as he's pulling him up, or so he thinks, he's saying, you know, justice, not vengeance. Justice, not vengeance. Like, that's what Bruce has tried to ingrain in him.
Yeah, it's an awesome scene.
And so he's like, oh, as much as I want to rip him apart because I can, even though I'm like, what, 12?
Yeah.
He's like, justice, not vengeance. Just, and he's just pulling it up, pulling it up, pulling it up. And he pulls up the rope to find that he was too late. Yeah. Like, the guy must have got caught in the machinery and he's done. And then Damien's reaction is, crap. Like, he's like, I tried, but like,
and yeah, but that's the thing, is that it's important to him now.
Yeah, exactly.
And it's, I didn't like Damien originally when they created him, but he's become, for a lot of people, they all love him as a character, as Robin. I love seeing Batman have an actual son, and I love how in these movies, these three movies, they've really presented them in a way where they resemble each other,
mm-hmm.
both physically, but also in their tones, of the way they talk, the way they say things to people, yeah. the way they react to things.
One of the examples is when he, like, Dick Grayson orders, not orders, but asks Alfred to make sure that Damien stays in bed because he had gotten hurt on a mission. And then he's, you know, Damien's not having it. Who else do we know that's that stubborn?
Yeah.
Like, yeah. He'll have a broken arm and it's, like, hanging off of his collarbone. And it's like, Master Wayne, I have to go back out there kind yeah. of thing. Like, yeah. he just wants to just go. Like, he's he doesn't. Yeah. He's literally falling apart at the seams and he doesn't know when to stop. But it's kind of cool to see that Damien is exactly the same way. Even though he wasn't there for his birth and all of this, and he just got him, you know, not too long ago, he's still his father's son.
Yeah. One of the most amazing comic book issues I've read, and I think you've read it too, was the one where it's called The Silent Issue. And it's after Damien dies. And actually, this story, where they've kind of pulled a bunch of things from in this, they've kind of combined a few different Batman story arcs and used it to adapt this, which I thought was really well done. But in this story of Bad Blood, the end of it would have been the death of Damien, as in the New 52. But they didn't go that route. But in the comic books, when Damien does die initially, Bruce finds a letter written from him, and throughout the comic book, it's all quiet. There's no words, no word balloons, nothing, except at the end, the only portion there is to read is a letter from Damien, and he is written to Bruce how much he appreciates everything he's done for him,
mm-hmm.
and he ends it by saying, "My mother gave me life, but you taught me how to live."
Yeah, I remember that.
And it's
yeah.
like one of the most heart-wrenching issues I've ever read. But you, when they these three movies, and as a trilogy, when you really put them all together and watch them as one story, they've done a really good job.
Yeah.
They haven't, I don't think they've dropped the ball. I think they've each movie has complemented each other, and I really like that this movie begins. I hadn't seen Batman versus Robin for a while up until this movie came out. And at the end of the Batman versus Robin, you see exactly where this one picks up, and you're like, I'm so used to these animated features being comic book adaptations
mm-hmm.
of actual books.
Mm-hmm.
So I know my comic book history of, oh, this is where the character's supposed to be in this time of the story.
Right.
Whereas in these ones, I'm like, why is Damien in the Himalayan mountains in the monastery? Like, what's he doing there?
Yeah, yeah.
And all of these now are like interconnected as one overarching story. And I thought the way it ended was great.
Yeah, I think, I don't know. I mean, I don't want to retract what I said. I still feel ways about this movie. It's not my favorite, but recounting certain things that happen within the movie and their expressions to each other, or, you know, as much as, you know, Damien, he's upset with Dick Grayson because he's like, you know, you don't want to be Batman, and that's good because you can never be Batman. I'm his son. I'm yeah. the best Batman that that could ever take
on. I'm the only one who has the right to yeah. be Robin, yeah. and I'll be more Batman than you'll ever yeah. be. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's like, those things make the story cool to me. But like I said, I just don't like that many people all of a sudden were just in it and then accepting of it. Like, all of a sudden, Batwing, that's original.
Well, what do you call him?
don't know. Like, but then
it's
I thought all along that, you know, Bruce Wayne was all this business, but you know, I'm gonna go for it now. I'm okay with it. Like, no, like, this takes years of acceptance, and you know what I mean? Like, you gotta mentally be ready, and for him to have just been okay with it, I'm like, I don't know. I think I just take it too serious sometimes.
I think we talked about this as well a long time ago. I asked you this question, but I think the concept of secret identities is slowly fading away. Whereas, as much as I think that it's becoming something to use in a story to keep things interesting and to, you know, give them the double life and to protect the people they love, Batman is the one character who I do appreciate having that mystery mm-hmm. around him.
Yeah, yeah.
He's the one character I do like that he is.
I think that's why I have such a problem with it, because yeah. I do see the appreciation of it within that character, and I feel like he appreciates it too.
And he works hard. He takes a lot of steps to make sure that the associate, even if there's an associate, like, hey, that's Bruce Wayne Tech, he's done things like within this Batman story, the whole concept of Batwing and all these other Bat-related characters outside of Batwoman is that Bruce Wayne, when he had come back from quote-unquote the dead, when he was stuck traveling through time, he had said, you know what, all these years, I've been the one who has been funding Batman.
Mm-hmm.
I'm the one behind his technology. I'm the one who gives him all of his stuff. So even when he's admitted to the association, kind of like Tony Stark and Iron Man,
right.
He's never made it be that I am Batman.
Yeah.
He says, he made it so that each part of the world...
So if people start catching on to something, he's like, yeah, you're right, but not really.
Because he kept, when he had originally come back, he kept Nightwing as Batman, mm-hmm. along with him being Batman. They were both Batman at the same time, so it would completely throw people off.
Mm-hmm.
It would just became a matter of which Batman are you now.
Yeah.
Because there'd be a Batman. Batwing was associated with Batman Incorporated, which was Bruce Wayne's corporation, or something that he had made to be like, there's going to be Batmans all over the world representing Wayne's interests.
Yeah.
That
yeah.
we want to bring justice to Paris, to all these different continents and countries. And Batwing was an extension of that. So in that case, I kind of like it, but I don't, because he just looks like an Iron Man
yeah.
thing to me.
Yeah, exactly. You know? And for him to just have known how to work the equipment, it's like...
convenient.
Like, I'm sorry, how do you know how to fly that
yeah.
way? You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
It's just, I don't know. Whatever, it's just the movie.
That's just that was my one thing. I wasn't like, oh wow, Batwing's so cool.
Mm.
But I loved seeing Dick Grayson and Damian teamed up. I don't know if you've read any of those Batman and Robin graphic novels we've got on the shelf, but you would like it. If you like Dick Grayson as Batman and Damian as Robin without there being a Bruce Wayne around, I know that's like sacrilege for you, but I highly recommend it to anybody even listening to the show. If they want to read a good Batman story, Batman and Robin from Grant Morrison is awesome.
I think the only thing, too, that we haven't touched on is that this movie alludes to Talia's death.
Yes.
But not really, because I guess we don't really know. We just saw a plane go down, but we don't know what that means.
So let me ask you, see how you feel about it. I think DC animated movies as a whole, and in within the Batman universe, have made better films than the live-action Batman movies. And I think this story with Talia, I much prefer Talia presented this way than Dark Knight Rises. What do you think? Would you agree, disagree?
I think there was two different Talias in Dark Knight Rises.
I thought the way they used her was very horrible.
I thought there was the one that was very savvy and smart and deceitful, and I thought there was that Talia. And then I thought there was the crazy, extremist, no emotion, kill them all, kind of. And that Talia is like, I find, maybe I'm wrong, I find that to be the Talia in the animated, and the animated series, or movies.
I agree with you on that. I just think that the way that they used her at the end of Dark Knight Rises and her extremely cheesy, cheap death. Whereas in this one, she looks like she died, but you don't really know.
Well, it's like in Batman Begins. It looks like Ra's al Ghul died, but you don't really know.
Right. And I just felt like this Talia is much more from Bad Blood, much more of an interesting character throughout this series of trilogies. Mm-hmm. And I almost feel like they're doing a better job at making and telling Batman stories than we've ever had presented on the big screen. Why do you think that is? If you even agree with it. I'm not saying you do or you don't.
I'm going to say something ignorant. I'm going to say because there's more comic book people involved.
I think it's ignorant.
In the animated things. And I think Hollywood or... I guess as much as they want to say they're trying to stay true to the character, I think there's only so much comic book people can have a say. It's all about how much money can we make about it. It's not about staying true to the character and appeasing to true fans. It's, no, how much can we make to reach the masses?
Right.
So they don't really care if this Talia or this Batman or this Joker is what people want, like the right. True fans. It's what generates more money. Hollywood, someone else, the person writing the check is the one that has the say.
Yeah.
But I think perhaps in animation, it's a little bit different.
And they can make ridiculous looking characters pop up on the screen. It's like, well, it's an animation movie. Like, what did you expect?
Yeah.
Us not to do that.
Right.
I guess that might be it. I almost feel sometimes like, if they can do it so good here, and it's not even like a 2-hour feature, it's like 1 hour and 20 minutes. They tell so much story and so much character development. Why is this, how can they do this and it's so hard to do it in live action? But we're less than a month away, or less than 2 months away, from seeing a live action Batman return to the silver screen.
Yeah.
And he will be accompanied by a couple of other characters. We don't know if they're going to be his friends or not.
Yeah.
We're yet to see. Batman v Superman. How do you feel? You are on the cusp of watching Batfleck. As she takes a last swig of her drink. Last trailer has been released. What'd you think? Excited? Nervous?
I saw the last trailer.
I think the fight scenes with Batman look great.
Thank you for your opinion. Because you asked me, then you're like, I think this.
No, I was thinking back to it, and that was the one thing that stood out for me. Like, yeah, I just wanted to not forget to say that.
Physically, I think, because I don't want to be wrong, but I hope I'm wrong. So I don't want to be wrong in the sense of like this, like Ben Affleck shouldn't wear the cowl. But I hope I'm wrong in the sense of like he better do it justice. Okay. You know what I mean? Physically, he looks like an excellent Batman. Excellent. Like even the few fight scenes that I saw, I'm like, oh my goodness.
I know, right?
Like, it just looks so good. And just, like, if Batman were real.
Yeah.
Like, that would be it. That would be it.
When I saw Christian Bale in some of those scenes, I'm like, yeah. Yeah, that's what Batman. But this one trumps it.
He's, like, his chest is huge. His shoulders are huge. His, like... He's not so theatrical looking. It looks realistic. Like a person needs to be agile and strong. Like you need to have armor that makes you look like you can't go down. And he looks like that. Like, he just looks invincible to me.
He doesn't even look like... The way he looks in that suit is, to me, the way he it's described originally. Like, people don't know if he's real or not. Is that a human?
Right.
That's doing this?
So
it looked good. When yeah, that opening sequence of that trailer was pretty impressive.
And even Bruce Wayne, though, like the salt and pepper hair and just the painful, angry look in his face, yeah. like we have to stop him kind of thing. Like, if he can do this, what can stop him from doing this? And the panic.
Yeah.
Like, Batman doesn't panic. Batman problem solves, but he looked like he was panicking. Like, but that's like a real life scenario, I would find, right? Like, I don't know. I am excited.
Yeah, you're getting excited.
I'm excited
now.
Yeah. I wanna.
So what I'm thinking we should do is, leading up to Batman v Superman, is do all Batman Superman related episodes and talk about.
That's not hard to do.
That's not hard to do. Hey, it's the Cave of Solitude. We gotta stay true to the name. So we should come up with a list of books that we talk about, maybe some animated features, and our connection to the characters that we've already not talked about 100 times on this show, right? And I think what I would really like to do just before the movie releases is rewatch Man of Steel and see all the things that have been set in motion with that movie. What were your thoughts about that movie looking back on it now? And then kind of seeing if the Batman v Superman movie saves the Man of Steel's criticisms. Everything that people didn't like. And, you know, I kind of felt like I liked Captain America when it first came out, the first Avenger.
Mm-hmm.
But Winter Soldier makes me love the first Captain America.
Right.
And whatever I kind of didn't like about it, I love it now.
Yeah.
So I wonder if the same will happen with Batman v Superman.
Yeah.
So I want to... So this month coming up, our next couple of episodes will be Batman Superman centric, as they usually are. But this one will be a concentrated effort to really get into the excitement and the hype. We're gonna board the hype train. It's going to make a stop in the Cave of Solitude as we head towards Batman v Superman, and hopefully it breaks Star Wars records. Well, I don't think so. All right, guys. Thank you for listening. Thank you, Daft J, for your wonderful intro. And your commentary on the Bad Blood film. You can email us your opinions on everything we talked about, whether you liked or didn't like it, at caveofsolitude.com. And leave us an iTunes review. I know I have at least 5 friends that listen to the show, and you could all leave an iTunes review to help us get on the relevant page on the comic books and entertainment part of the iTunes podcast page. So please leave us a review. Visit us at kosolitude.com. I am Eric Anthony.
I'm Lady J.
And we will be coming back to you soon. Thank you guys for listening.